Visa wants to know, where would you like to be? Whether you're a super fan or just in it to win your league, Visa knows we want to spend less time standing in line and more time pursuing our passions. That's why for over 60 years, Visa's been adding innovative plays to the way we pay. From tapping to pay to getting paid in 30 minutes or less, they're giving businesses and consumers more tools to do just that. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise, whether it's a street vendor in front of the stadium or picking up the latest NFL gear online. Visa wants to provide us with the most secure and easy payment experience possible, so everyone, everywhere can get to where they'd like to be. Visa, everywhere you want to be.
All right, let's talk some Patriots now. They sit at 10-2, which is incredible for any team not named the Patriots. On Sunday night, their anemic offense caught up with them as they fell to a hungrier Houston Texans team. During that game, Brady was seen at one point yelling at his teammates, trying to get them going. To the surprise of literally nobody, Brady was asked about it yesterday.
We're not 2-10. We're 10-2. And I know there's very high expectations, as there are for us. And, you know, I think there's just the expectations for our team often are, you know, a very, very, very high level. And I understand that. But at the same time, I think there's realistic expectations with our circumstances and incorporating different elements and players and injuries. And again, we're just trying to do the best that we can do.
Nick, can you understand where Brady's coming from? What's your reaction to what he had to say about expectations?
Well, expectations, and the word I keyed on there was circumstances. What are the circumstances? Because I think I know what the circumstances are. You got a 42-year-old quarterback who looks like it. And if you do not have the defense of the 2015 Broncos or the 02 Bucks or the 2000 Ravens, you are not going to be able to beat the best teams in the league. That one of the major circumstances the Patriots have is they have a quarterback who's 26th in yards per attempt while being 29th in completion percentage and 21st in passer rating. The only way any team, if we removed the names, you said a moment ago, if you removed Kirk Cousins' contract, if we removed the names and you just looked at statistical profiles of teams, you would say, oh, I know what this Patriot team reminds me of. The Jags team from a couple years ago. A quarterback that's in the bottom third of the league in every major category, whose defense is playing great, who has to win a very specific style of football. And I understand because he is the GOAT, we make excuses. Now, I'm very excited for when LeBron's in this phase of his career to make sure that we make these same exact excuses when he is right, below average for his position compared to his contemporaries. But I watched Russell Wilson last night. And Russell Wilson's best weapon is Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett is not demonstrably a better football player than Julian Edelman. Very different. Tyler Lockett's vertically elite. Yep. Julian Edelman in the middle. DK Metcalf, or Decaf Metcalf, as I heard he's called recently. A rookie who was drafted after the Patriots rookie N'Keal Harry. They could have had DK Metcalf. Yeah. They took N'Keal Harry. Yeah. What about the tight end position? Seattle lost Will Disley, who was a guy that Russell Wilson created in a lab in the offseason. Will Disley, when you were there, I think caught 17 passes all year. Beast. And then turned into this player this season. Yeah. And then but popped his Achilles. Great quarterbacks make it work. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. But he is right now not a great quarterback, and he's not able to make it work. So to me, that's a big part of the circumstances Brady's talking about.
Nick, I just talked you up.
I knew everything that I said about Cousins is now going to be undercut.
No, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're the smartest person I've ever worked with, man. You're just,
but you disagree here.
I disagree. You're wrong here when it comes down to, you know, Brady is playing like a 42-year-old football player. You know, it has nothing to do with his ability. It has everything to do with X's and O's right now. Think about who he's missing right now. And why it's so important, the great Gronk. The reason why this is important is not because it's Gronkowski and he's one of the best tight ends ever, one of the best football players ever. It's because of how their offense has been set up for 10 years. Progression read offense.
So explain it.
Okay. So in offense, I may go left to the middle, to the right side of the field, down to my check down. With Tom Brady, over the last 10 years, he's been able to read inside out. He's been able to go Gronkowski down the middle, possibly corner, down to Edelman, running his option routes, have like four different options, down to the back. There's never been a better quarterback, a better offense over the past 10 years that's been able to get to the back fast, right? And the reason why they're doing that is because he's able to get to that read within a millisecond. He knows if he's going to Gronkowski, if he's number one. He knows if he's going to Edelman. He knows if he's going to the back.
Because now, his first two reads are all in the middle of the field.
It's all there. I got Gronkowski on the first level, right?
Edelman the next.
And then I have Edelman.
You got your back.
And then I have my back. He's missing that. Right? He doesn't have anyone stretching the field. Doesn't always have to be this DeSean Jackson. Doesn't always have to be this Tyler Lockett guy who has this amazing speed. You can have an amazing tight end that can stretch the field. That is why they're struggling. It's because they don't have not Gronkowski, but that guy running down the middle of the field being able to stretch the defense.
Down the same.
You talked about how this team doesn't have what the Broncos or what the Ravens had when they went to the Super Bowl. Well, don't you think their defense, wouldn't you put their defense up with theirs where you only need a shell of who Tom Brady was?
No, what I'm saying is, I didn't say they don't have it. I'm saying you have to have it.
And you don't think they do?
Well, no. They up until recently, I would have said absolutely yes. And then the last month, it looks like it's a very good but no longer historically elite defense. I just quickly, though, like to show one thing. Let's just look at the Patriot quarterbacks from 3 years ago and how they're doing this year. Because the Niners and the Colts have similar weapon issues as the Patriots. Niners also traded for a receiver midseason. The Colts have been without T.Y. Hilton throughout the year. If you look at that, Tom Brady is last amongst those three in passer rating. He is last amongst those three in yards per attempt. He is last amongst those three in completion percentage. He's got two more touchdowns than Jacoby Brissett. Aside from that, he's trailing Jimmy G in that. The Colts and Niners don't have some embarrassment of riches weapons-wise. Mm-hmm. The best weapon for the Niners, Kittle, has been injured. The best weapon for the Colts, T.Y. Hilton, has been injured. He is what he is at this point, and so you do have to have that level of defense, and against Lamar, against Deshaun, the types of quarterbacks you're going to have to beat, it didn't look like that. They play the best quarterback in football in 5 days in Patrick Mahomes. Very curious how that defense looks, because I know how the Patriot offense is going to work, because Gronk ain't coming back.
Gronk ain't coming back, but they can definitely help him out.
Coach, do you see a way the Cowboys can turn things around? Maybe make a deep playoff run with where they are right now?
Yeah, but need to get away from all the talking. And whether it's the post-game tirade that goes on, and I know Michael Bennett has experience with winning programs, but to come in and blast the team after the game, and he hasn't been there very long. So there's that element. There's the chippiness that they're talking about in practice. There's the chip on the shoulder that we just heard about. I don't know how much closer the locker room can get with the amount of adversity that they've had. And at some point, you've got to push that stuff aside and really just focus on the task at hand. And Jerry, with the a vote of confidence and all those things and adding pressure to the coaching staff, you can't add any more pressure than what they're under. You're not going to change anything by doing that. And sometimes in life and sometimes in sports, you have to actually take a step back and decompress a little bit so that you can play at a level that you should be playing at. Guys get so pressured up and so worked up about trying to find an answer that they can't actually function the way that they should function.
Coach, well, two things. One is with the Michael Bennett thing, is it fair to maybe put that in a slightly different category only because he did that, he thought, behind closed doors? He was just so loud that other people heard it. Like, that wasn't a public statement. It was an outburst that became public because people heard it outside of the locker room. Like, he didn't go on a rant to the media. He wasn't trying to send a message outside of the locker room. At least to me, that's a little different than Dak in front of the microphones saying what he said. To answer your question, Jenna, I do not think they can. I think in the NFL, unless you have had some devastating getting injuries, where everyone's getting healthy at the end of the season, you usually are about what your record says you are. And the Cowboys' record says they are the definition of a league average team. They're league average by they're at 500, by there's about 15 teams better than them, 15, 16 teams worse than them, and just eye test. They beat really bad teams aside from the Jets. They lose to the good teams. That is who they have been all year. So I don't think they're going on a playoff run. But Dak's comments irritated me, and I like Dak the way he's conducting himself his whole time in the league. So maybe irritated is an unfair word, but they rubbed me wrong because the chip on your shoulder, no one believes in us thing, I get playing that when people have every reason to believe in you and they still aren't. If a New England Patriot came out today and said, you know what? We're 10-2 and everyone's acting like the sky's falling. No problem. Stay off the bandwagon. We'll see at the end of the year. Then at least I get it. Richard Sherman with his commentary.
Richard Sherman did it in San Francisco.
Right. When it's like the, you know, don't jump on it now. We know you think we're paper tigers. The reason people don't believe in the Cowboys is because the games are on television. And we've watched them. Like, it's we're not doubting you. We are accurately and fairly commentating on how you've done. And so, Dak, to me, what teams that are underachieving or struggling often do, and you see it in Philadelphia, is they just reach for different motivational triggers because what they've been pressing or reaching for isn't working. That, to me, is what the Cowboys are doing right now, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is simple for me. The Cowboys coach, they're not a smart team, right? I think that's what it comes down to it for me. I'm over the Cowboys now since the Patriots game. When I was able to watch the game and watch it very closely and see that they weren't controlling the things that they control. You can control punt pro, meaning that you should never give up a block punt, right? You shouldn't be jumping off sides, especially in crucial moments. They're not a sound football team. And that starts from
should
the top
to
all the way down
to
the players.
And understand that they're pooch kicking.
You got to understand that. Do I fair catch this? Do I catch it? Do I go up and block? Or do I let my return man come up and get? These are things that we literally, as from a player's perspective, we literally walk through, it seems like, every single day for like an hour. On just situational football. And that's what it comes down to. You can talk about all the talent in the world. You can talk about all the players. You can talk about all the X's and O's. But it comes down to making the right decision in those crucial moments.
Coach, how big is the gap between the potential on this team and where they actually are?
That's a great question because I think Nick's point is fair. You are typically what your record says you are, and as much
that's
as
that's why I asked.
But as much as you want to say they should be something more, could they be something more? Could you argue that they could be something more? Look, I've always had questions about Dak and how much of a force multiplier he is. There's a lot of talk about how good this defense is, but they're close to last in the league in generating turnovers, and they've had problems at different points in the year. You know, being outcoached by New England, a lot of people have been outcoached by New England, but there were quite a few examples of situational awareness that could have been better. This is a frustrating team, and they're frustrated, and people that watch it are frustrated because you do see that element of underachieving, and now you see the element of stretching. The last game where Jason goes for it on fourth and one from his own 20,
up 7 in the second quarter.
I love the idea of taking some chances and trying to change the narrative and change the momentum, but you don't take those types of chances. That just felt more like desperation than calculated risk.
Coach said it. It's too much talk, too much noise. And you look at that situation, 4th and 1 on your own 20, right? That's probably where that comes from. The owner is in your ear. You have media, players, all these little small groups. I call them small groups in the locker room, right? Guys start getting together. Oh, and this is when your team starts breaking down. Let's get together. It's like, man, what do you think about that call? You know, oh, I don't like this. This isn't working. And that starts to deteriorate your team from the inside out. But the number one thing you always have to do is you always have to protect the inside of that building. All this noise, the only thing we should be talking about right now is we're going to turn it around. We're going to do our job. We're going to work harder. That's the only thing. All this chip on the shoulder, trust the process when there's four games left. It's all noise that they're creating from the inside. And that's a problem. That's a huge problem.
Brandon Marshall telling it like it is. I like it. Back here, first things first, Brandon Marshall is with us all day. Great to have you. Even greater. And we're now joined by Sports
Even Greater.
Senior writer.
What up, man? How are you doing? Oh, take that, Brandon. Nope. Brandon Marshall's fine, but now we got the real star of the show, Chris Mannix here.
You see how they twist the words around? They
did No, he didn't twist it.
Okay.
Verbatim. Yeah.
Love to have you here.
Good to be here.
It's great. Brandon, as always, love you being here. Let's talk about other things. Let's talk about the enigma that is Kyrie Irving. This summer, it was the New York team in Brooklyn who signed Kyrie and KD, not the one at the Garden. And while the Knicks have had their own share of problems, Brooklyn might have one too. Kyrie's missed the last 9 games with a shoulder injury, and in his absence, the team has gone 6-3. With him in the lineup, they were 4-7. Nick, you buy the narrative that the Nets are actually better without Kyrie?
So this is so interesting. And I'm so glad you're here, not just because you cover the whole league, but you obviously cover the Celtics on a local level and the whole league on a national level, so you have real contact with Kyrie from the last couple years. This now is 3 places that this has happened. Cleveland, before LeBron got there, was terrible with Kyrie as the lead guy, but he's young and the roster wasn't good. But the problem was, if you looked at the on-court, off-court numbers, if LeBron wasn't on the court, even the 3 years they played together, and it was, hey, for 3 minutes at the end of the first quarter, lead us, Kyrie, the Cavs were a bad team. They were bad with Kyrie as the lead dog over the course of a season. But we also saw him in the NBA Finals and in the playoffs consistently be exceptional alongside LeBron. He then gets to Boston. And that first year in Boston, correct me if my history's wrong, things are going really well. Gordon Hayward suffers a horrific injury, which is awful, but team's playing really well. Then Kyrie gets hurt, and they go on this really improbable, magical playoff run that, yeah, it did take them 7 games in the first round, but they won it. Then they win in the second round. They get up 3-2 on the Cavs before LeBron goes Superman on them to end their year. The next year in Boston, they are worse than the team that we saw at the end of last year. And what you saw was Tatum and Brown and other guys not know their way exactly. And now we're in Brooklyn, a team that last year was not only just a surprising team, but a good team with good young players coming together. And Kyrie gets there and Spencer Dinwiddie's production falls off. And the team is, Kyrie's numbers are unbelievable. He's averaging almost 30 points a game. He's sensational. He hits a game winner. He almost hits another game winner. He does all these things. But the team is losing. And Kyrie gets hurt. And all of a sudden, Dinwiddie's playing himself again.
Fantastic.
The team's winning. And so at some point, it's not a coincidence. I can't find the analytical reasoning, which is what I try to lean on, aside from maybe he is such a ball-centric player and such a gravitational player as far as everything has to revolve around his offense that other guys get stagnant. But right now, it does not appear that he can be the best player on a team that can even be good, much less great.
Well, there's some truth to that. I think that the comparisons you're making for me are a bit of a bridge too far, right?
Okay.
The Cavaliers stuff, that was post-LeBron. They were young. They were bad. They were a mess. Boston, look, I am all for giving Kyrie his share of the blame in Boston. His lack of leadership was a driving force behind why that team melted down. Though I would say in the year before, they were playing really good basketball right up until Kyrie got hurt.
Yep.
Right up. So like Kyrie going down, it's not like they were playing poorly, then took off.
Correct.
They were playing great and then they took off and surprised people at the end. This Nets situation is totally different to me because look at who they're beating right now. Like, you're not going to sit there and say they can't beat Chicago, Charlotte, Sacramento, New York, Cleveland. On this run, Boston's really the only good team they've beaten here. So I believe they'd have the same record if Kyrie was in the mix. And the numbers you talk about, Nick, this season, yeah, they're 4-6 with Kyrie in the lineup, but offensively, their numbers are better in virtually every possible way with Kyrie out.
Well, by the way, that was the same with Boston last year when he was in or out, because last year even he missed time. And we talked about it, that all of their numbers were better with him than without him, except for wins. Like, and that was, and I'm not talking about year one with Kyrie, I'm talking about with year two. And it's just, to me, it's last year I always dismissed it, Jenna. Whenever you would bring up, here's the record without Kyrie, here's the, and I would dismiss it. I'm like, he is the best player on the team. You cannot take him out and make your team better. But if it happens again, and maybe this is too small of a sample, then to me it's something that has to be acknowledged.
I'm not concerned at all. I'm actually moving back to Brooklyn. All right. So 3 years I played in New York, one with the Jets, two with the Jets, one with the Giants. I lived in Brooklyn. All right. I'm a Brooklyn guy now. I'm moving back to Brooklyn. And when I do, my son and I, we're going to sit courtside. I am more excited about this team now than I ever have been. This isn't about Kyrie. Right. This is just about the narrative. This is the story. Right. And so if we want to dive into the story, let's do that. OK. When you look at the Cavaliers in that situation there with LeBron James, this is more about the maturation of Kyrie and him trying to find his way. I leave that situation the way I did, and it was bad. It was toxic. And I go to Boston. Now it's me. I am the man. Let me go lead the way. That's not his makeup. He's not a leader. He's a talented guy. He's one of the best basketball players ever to walk this earth.
But
he's not a leader, okay? So he learned that there. They didn't bring Kyrie in to lead my Brooklyn Nets team. They didn't bring him in to be the leader. They brought KD in to do that, right? So this is more about, okay, this is the story and less about Kyrie and his personality. I'm selling this. I'm not concerned at all. I'll be sitting courtside come next year.
Yeah, look, it's a fair point on the Kevin Durant stuff, because in a way, none of this really matters. Like, nothing this Nets team does this year actually matters. As long as they are not the basketball version of the Clampets and that they hate each other and look like Boston from last year, everything else is going to work out. It's going to be a completely different team playing a completely different style at this time next year when Kyrie comes back. Now, your earlier point...
When KD comes back.
To your earlier point about how Spencer Dinwiddie's numbers go down... That's a fair concern, because these guys have to know what they signed up for. Spencer Dinwiddie was one of the driving forces in bringing Kyrie Irving to Brooklyn. He was the guy in December that is texting Kyrie Irving saying, this is where that you want to be. So this is what you wanted. You've got to kind of accept it. But if they bow out in the first round of playoffs this year, even if they don't make the playoffs, it doesn't matter.
As long as they don't hate each other,
it does not matter.
Okay, so hold on. This is more general. But we got to stop with the nothing matters but the one team that wins the title. Nothing matters for Brooklyn this year because they can't win the title, so why play the games? It's one of the reasons that despite the league having more parity than ever before, this season being so interesting, people aren't watching as much. Pardon me. It's one of the reasons that the narrative surrounding all-time great players like James Harden, has he made an NBA Finals in Houston? Well, 40 a game. Who gives a damn? Everything matters. Some things matter more. And whether or not Kyrie Irving, even for one solo season, can be a part of a winning formula does matter, at least to a degree.
But he's a champion, though, Nick. He's a champion. That says a lot. We put guys in these positions as leaders because they're talented. If he's walking around and he wants that and he's saying, I am the leader, then that's his fault, right? But this guy is a champion. He has that pedigree. All we need from him, I need 25 points a game to win. When KD comes back, I need 25 points a game. I need 7 assists. And I need you to hit the clutch shot in those clutch moments. That's what he needs to do. I don't need him to lead my team. I don't need him to stand up when things are breaking down. I need him to do those three things. If they do those three things next year, they will be in contention.
Well, when KD's not there, he should at least have some semblance of de facto leadership, I think, in his resume.
It's just not in his DNA, though. Like, it's never going to be.
Nick, you think Russell Wilson can challenge Lamar for MVP?
Absolutely. There's too much of the season left to act like this award is done for. At this point last year, Drew Brees was the prohibitive favorite, a bigger favorite over Patrick Mahomes than Lamar is right now over Russell Wilson. And then by the end of the year, Patrick was nearly a unanimous MVP because of how the season ended. And by the way, this might become a three-person race. here in a couple weeks, because Deshaun Watson's coming on pretty damn strong. But I think Russell Wilson was the leader after 4 weeks and the leader after 8 weeks. Lamar's the leader after 12. But it's very close. And I think we can show you the numbers real quick, Brandon, before you jump in, of how close it is. Their passer ratings, point and a half off each other. The total yards per game, if you incorporate rushing and passing, less than 4 yards away from each other. Total touchdowns, Lamar's got the 3 lead. Same number of giveaways, and the teams have the same record. So right now, as I like to say, it's a bit of a Beyonce-Rihanna situation. It's a matter of taste. And there is no wrong answer to me between these two right now.
The thing that I'm afraid of when it comes to Russell Wilson winning MVP, and I love Russell Wilson, play with one of my quarterbacks. Yes. Okay, thanks, Dustin. All right, that's one of my quarterbacks. It's the popularity test, right? Like right now, Lamar Jackson is the most popular football player
in the league.
In the league, okay. But I want to go back a year. One of the things that I've always tried to do was, how do you lead the leaders, right? I've always tried to lead the leaders because it's extremely hard for a guy like Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, to give and give and give and lead and lead and lead and speak into other players' lives and uplift them, make them better. Who's doing that for a Russell Wilson? Who's doing that for a Tom Brady? So last year when I was playing with Russell, every day I would walk by him, I'd say, MVP, you're the MVP. I said, we know you're going to win a Super Bowl. You already won a Super Bowl. You're going to win a couple more, but let's go get MVP. Let's go be MVP. I would literally say that to him every single day. And now, I'm not saying I manifested it, but this guy is the MVP. He's not going to win it by himself. He's going to be co-MVP. This is going to be a year where we have both. What these guys are doing, and you just showed the stats, if you take out the popularity test right now, who do you give it to? Right? We got to give it to both.
And so the way just we've had a co-MVP before. It was Steve McNair, I think, and Peyton Manning. I know Steve McNair. The way that would work is because of the NFL MVP balloting, it's around 50 people. They all submit one name. It's not a full ballot. It's just if it's a true tie, is if they end up with 25 votes apiece or 24-24 with Deshaun getting a couple. It's, to me, that is in play because we showed you the numbers. They're that similar. The records are identical. And a point you made before the show, what would either of these teams look like with just a league average quarterback on there?
That's right.
Put Jimmy Garoppolo, who's fine. Like, he's playing, he's been fine this year. If he were the quarterback for the Ravens or the Seahawks, what would their teams look like right now?
So if you take Lamar Jackson off of the Ravens, they're not even a 500 team. You take Russell Wilson off of the Seahawks, they're probably 500 because I love Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
But they're not a good team. These guys change the entire landscape of the organization.
Yep.
The organization. These teams are phenomenal. They're in phenomenal shape with these quarterbacks for the next few years. But I want to see this come down to these two guys, and I want to see this be two co-MVPs. There's going to be collusion.
Collusion.
There's going to be collusion amongst the voters. That's how we're going to get it done.
I feel like Seattle's doing more with less between these.
Really?
Yeah, with Russell Wilson's doing more with less.
Well, right now they're both, one's the one seed right now, and one's the two seed right now.
By the way, real quick, Dusty, check for 17 quarterbacks you've played with.
17 quarterbacks.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.